It's a Wilson snipe, you say?
It is a Wilson snipe, so that is the sound. They have specialized feathers that, when they hit a certain velocity and the correct angle, will vibrate the feathers to make that sound.
Oh.
It's called winnowing, and it's part of their courtship display.
Huh. Interesting. All these little special words. You're listening to the Season Watch podcast. We're back to words, Charlie. I'm
yep.
Heidi Holton. That's Charlie Mitchell, our phonology coordinator. This week on our morning show, Kari was talking about how many swallows are around here.
Yes.
At KXC. And I looked it up. It's a grouping of them because she was just talking about there's so many. Mm-hmm. Is a gulp.
A gulp of swallows. That is really funny. I kind of think of like the swallows, the, oh boy, what are they called? Nighthawks?
Mm.
Yeah, the nighthawks is like, you know, when you think of a whale going through the ocean, feeding on krill, it just kind of like opens this huge maw and scoops them up. Some of those, like swallows and the nighthawks, just have that same just cavernous mouth. And obviously, they have to be a little bit more specific because they're going through air and the insects aren't quite as common as the krill. But that's definitely how I see it. It's just scooping them up as they fly along.
Yeah. All these words. So Wilson snipe, pretty easy to see. I don't know that I've ever seen a Wilson snipe.
So I also haven't seen one. They are harder to see. They're much easier to hear. But yeah, that winnowing sound is definitely what to look for or to listen for, especially, yeah, at dusk and dawn.
Little bird vibrato there through the wings.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of nice.
Yeah. Hummingbirds do this too. I love scientists. Scientists are so weird. But they like put hummingbird feathers into a wind tunnel to figure out what speed they need to be going to make the feathers go vzzz. Because it's part of the mating ritual or the mating flights of the broad-winged hummingbird? One that lives in Colorado.
I'm hoping no hummingbirds were harmed in those experiments. They just happened upon the
feathers. No, that would be, I'm pretty sure, illegal since they are migratory.
Okay. Okay. Good.
Maybe there's a permit, but I doubt any hummingbirds were harmed.
Can you imagine if you were the one doing the experiment, the amount of glee you would have?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yep.
You would be humming as well. You would be.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. So it is spring, full on spring. Now it's not, it was last time you and I were together, you know, the northern part of the state, mm-hmm. still seeing some winter and, you know, wasn't quite there yet, but holy cow, things have changed.
Absolutely. I was going to pick up a friend from the airport yesterday and in the Twin Cities, it is now actually green.
Hmm.
The dominant color in the landscape is green. And as we drove north to my place, there is still enough gap in the trees. It's getting there. It's not quite there yet, but it's going to happen overnight. The next warm day we have, it's just going to be green everywhere. We're not going to be able to see the sky through the canopy anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be great.
Yeah, we'll stop seeing. I'm leaning here as I look out the window on the Mississippi mm-hmm. River. We'll stop being able to see the river pretty soon. It'll be covered in, but I can still see it right now, so.
Take the opportunity to, you know, look through the trees and see what's back there in the forest while you can, because it's going to be a green wall before long.
Well, what kind of student reports were we? They're just on top of everything this week, or?
Boy, are they. Yeah, they are flooding in. We've got the spring flood of reports, which is great. The one I chose for this week is from Little Falls Middle School.
And everyone, if you're on Instagram, needs to check out their Instagram page and the drawings by Chad.
Yes, absolutely. Their teacher, Chad Caddett's amazing illustrator, chalk drawings on their school blackboard, phenomenal. And then their Instagram is just chock full of sightings from the whole class, the whole school, what they're seeing. I remember 2 weeks ago, maybe, they had a coyote that just had two legs.
Oh,
that
yeah.
That survived the winter. Yeah.
Let's take a listen.
Cool stuff.
Little Falls.
This is Madeline and Rowan reporting from Little Falls Middle School. This is our phonology report for the week of April 26th.
We had our first dragonfly sighting on April 16th. It was believed to be a green darner.
The yellow-rumped warblers have arrived. The first was spotted on the 16th, and the next day they seem to be everywhere.
White-throated sparrows have been seen and heard with their grand old Canada, Canada, Canada call.
The first hepatica flowers are blooming in the woods, and the leaves of trout lily can be found, but no blooms yet.
There are also the leaves of leeks or ramps in the woods, but they are still very small right now.
The black bears are definitely out and roaming around in search for food.
Mr. Caddits observed a cottontail rabbit pulling fur off of its side, and we are guessing it is part of its nest-building process.
A classmate was able to photograph our first hermit thrush, brown thrasher, and first-ever orange-crowned warbler.
We are currently up to 95 on our school year bird species count. We should easily go over our goal of 100 with all the new migrants coming through.
On April 20th, we saw a spike white-tailed deer on a trail cam that was still carrying its antlers.
All of a sudden, the juncos appear to be gone. We went from seeing them everywhere to not seeing any, all in a 24-hour span.
There was a bright metallic green ground beetle, along with a zebra jumping spider that was spotted this week.
On the 22nd, we also had a report of an American bittern calling from a swamp with its glug-sounding call.
That is our report for this week. Until next week,
keep exploring, keep discovering, and keep connecting with the great outdoors.
I forgot about dragonflies are going to be coming back.
Oh, speaking of fun science experiments, the migratory patterns of green darters. Dragonflies are so small. Mm-hmm. And they figured out a way to put a tiny little transmitter, like glue it onto the back of a dragonfly, light enough that it wouldn't affect its like movement. And they were studying the way that these green darters migrate. And I forget how far they could move in a day, but it is astonishing the distance that these little guys can cover. Just like on their little wings.
Yeah. I always feel like dragonflies are sort of, I see them as like little superheroes.
Yep.
You know, I feel like they have little masks and they are saving us from mosquitoes. And they're out there.
Absolutely.
And I am, you know, I am all for them. And they just are doing, it's reminding me of when we talked to that bat person, how would you get a little camera on a bat, let alone a dragonfly? Holy cow.
Right. Yeah. It's amazing the technology that scientists have to come up with to study these tiny, tiny creatures. And dragonflies, I mean, your superhero comment there is absolutely spot on. Dragonflies, I mean, I would kind of think of them as, if I had to pick a superhero, like maybe Iron Man almost, because the way that their bodies are constructed gives them these superpowers where their wings, scientists studying their wings, each species, you know, all those delicate little veins that run through the wings,
mm-hmm.
each species has its own pattern. And the way that the pattern is constructed, where the spots are, affects how they fly. And so whether you have a dragonfly that is kind of patrolling above, you know, say a lake or something, and then going in to catch something versus kind of more of an ambush hunter that sits and waits and then flies out and gets it, it changes how the venation of their wings and how they're constructed. The wing is attached directly to the muscles inside of the, so most muscles would be like attached to the exoskeleton and it would flex its exoskeleton to move those muscles. The wings go essentially through the exoskeleton to directly connect to the muscles, which is why they can move them so fast and have such control. Their eyes are fascinating.
Yeah.
These are definitely superheroes and it pays off. They're the best hunters in existence. 95% right. success rate of, like, if they choose a prey item, there's a 95% chance that they'll get it. Like, big cats are 30%, maybe even less.
I know there are lots of different kinds of dragonflies, but I don't really know mm-hmm. how to identify different ones. But there are whole books on this, mm-hmm. Dragonflies of the North Woods.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe that's one of my goals, to notice at least a couple different ones this year, is to pay attention to
yeah.
that.
I think that's great. I think the first one that I learned to identify that's easiest for me is the 12-spotted skimmer. It's very common, and it has, as the name suggests, a whole bunch of spots on it on its wings. The males have both black and white spots, so it's over 12. And the females have only black spots. But if you see a dragonfly with a whole bunch of spots. Mm-hmm. That's probably your 12-spotted skimmer. I think the darners are also very, very beautiful.
Are they more that sort of metallic blue sort of feel to it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, hold on. Now I've got my darners.
Yeah, I'm looking.
My emerald's confused. Let me consult the dragonflies of the North Woods.
There we go. I'm looking at some photos online as well. And maybe you're like me. You're going to have a little goal for yourself of learning about something you know, the superheroes that you love so much, that there are more. I don't remember. I'm looking at the 12-spotted skimmer, which, by the way, I bet you there's more than 12 spots. Like, why is it called that?
Oh, the males, definitely more than 12. You only count the black spots.
Okay. So crazy. Like, you could just call it a spotted skimmer, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I agree.
I do not think I've ever seen one of those or paid enough attention to that.
Oh. Well, let me look. Oh, yep. Their range does extend north. The other one that I see a lot is the common whitetail. It has kind of darkish wings and then a bright blue, almost white tail to it. The ones that are kind of more amber or iridescent colored. The darners are the ones that kind of have a black body, but then have blue highlights on it.
Okay.
Kind of iridescent blue highlights. There are a lot of darners.
Oh, the common. I'm looking at the common whitetail right now. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
There, because the part, there are spots again on the wings, but the other part where it's not spotted is clear. And so it appears like these spots are floating in the.
Yeah.
It's really interesting to look at. Holy cow.
Yeah. And just in terms of like material science, the strength of a versus weight ratio of dragonfly wings, we have nothing to compare with it that like we manufacture. That is, a dragonfly wing is truly an exceptional material. How it functions like that. And then the other thing I want to mention on dragonflies before we move on is the difference between a dragonfly and a damselfly.
Yeah.
So dragonflies are the ones that kind of have this really bulky body. They kind of look like they go to the gym.
Superhero. There we go.
And yep. They tend to rest with their wings kind of spread out next to the body. Damselflies have a much thinner body. They don't look like they go to the gym as much. Mm-hmm. There are some differences, but they tend to rest with their wings held over their back. But both great hunters, but a major division in all of those little dragonfly damselflies you see flying around, and that's how to tell the difference. There's also a book, Damselflies of the North Woods.
Of course there is.
And I am trying to learn those ones, but they're hard.
Looking at a photo now of a damselfly, and I definitely have seen those, and I don't even, they look enough different from a dragonfly to me,
mm-hmm.
when they're perched, as you said. Also mentioned in the Little Falls report was the sound of the American bittern, and I feel like we should take a listen to that.
Yes, the glug glug call, as they called it.
Like drinking a beer in a swamp there.
Right.
Glug 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 glug.
Glug 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 glug. I heard that sound for the first time in the wild when I was on a hike at Long Lake Conservation Center with their director, Dave McMillan. It was like magic. On that day, I was like, yeah, we were there in spring. I said, I really hope I get to hear an American woodcock in the wild. And I think maybe the trip before, I had said, oh, I'd love to find a blue-spotted salamander. The trip before, sure enough, found a blue-spotted salamander. That trip, almost within the first 15 minutes of the hike, we heard an American woodcock. And then we rounded the corner and heard this glug, 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 glug. It was amazing. And so Dave and I stood very still, waited for it to call again, walked towards the little wetland where it was coming from. And eventually we got to see it, which they're very hard to see. It took a lot of looking, and we had to wait for it to call and then see the movement to be able to spot it. An amazing moment there, and Long Lake does have some magic to it. I need to go up there every time I need to see a new creature and say, man, I really hope I see.
Yeah, you got to put words to it, and then somehow you're going to see it.
Yeah.
And John Latimer talked about American bitterns this week as well.
Yes, in his response, he did an impression of one, and it's pretty good.
That's hilarious. That is hilarious. I don't think that's the first time I've heard him do that, but it's a welcome to hear it once again. Oh, my gosh.
I love John impressions of birds.
Yeah.
They're so good. He's impressive.
He is. Back in the day when Harry Hutchins was around, John's loyal companion and forestry instructor here, he was a birder. And John always said, Harry knows birds, not me. And since Harry passed, he's really taken on a lot of the Harry calls and all of that kind of stuff, too. So that's pretty neat.
The student has become the master.
There we go. Let's take a listen to some of the birds that John saw this week.
One, I saw a pair of wood ducks. I've seen several. In fact, I was having a conversation with Sam Miletich. He said, oh, a pair of wood ducks just flew over my house. And about 30 seconds later, a pair of wood ducks flew over my house. And so we both had wood ducks. I walked down to the lake the other day, and there were a pair right close to shore. I got a really good look at them with binoculars, and they are so stunning, just unbelievably beautiful. Lots of fun there. I had my first goldfinch in full plumage, in full summer plumage. Black cap, black wings, bright yellow body. That was about one day later than average. The common loon came back to my lake this past weekend, and that was 6 days later than average, but so was ice out on the lake, so that makes sense. The bald eagles are busy feeding their baby, or babies, I don't know, because they can't see into the nest, but they're making lots of trips back and forth on one of my, a couple of my walks this past week. One, I was walking by the nest to get to the lake, and I go by there maybe two times a week, and she or they are used to me, and they don't fly. They just hold the nest. And I try to walk by like a deer might, just not doing anything, not fast, not being excited, not yelling, just walking slowly past. And they put up with me. Well, I came around a little bend in the trail, and the second eagle was on the trail with some hapless piece of the mammal world, and took off carrying this black object that was about the size of a black gray squirrel. Now, you may recall a couple of weeks ago I mentioned that my neighbor Marvin had said he had a black gray squirrel at his house, and about a week later that black gray squirrel showed up at my house. And now I haven't seen the black gray squirrel in a couple of days, but the thing that comes to mind on this one is that I don't think of eagles as sort of snatch and grab. You don't see them making a dive on a squirrel or something like that. That's just not their style. They might catch a fish out of the water, but generally, you know, they're going to dine on roadkill deer and whatever else they can find that the ravens lead them to. I don't think of the eagle as being a grab a squirrel off of a branch kind of a bird, but I only got a look as the eagle was flying away from me. There was this black thing about the size of a gray squirrel hanging down from the talons of the eagle as it flew off. And I will continue to watch for the black gray squirrel that used to be at my house, may still be at my house, but I'm not confident. We'll find out. Yellow-rumped warblers came in. That's a couple of days early. Song sparrow, 1 day late. White-throated sparrows, 5 days early. Tree swallows, 3 days late. I saw my first bluebird. The juncos at my house are gone. They have moved on to the north, and there were a number of reports from the students of juncos in the area, but they have left my house, and I suspect that for the most part, many of you will be probably seeing your last juncos in the next week or so. There are some that actually will nest here, so some of you will be blessed with a junco or two around for the summer, but for the most part, that all happens further north. I walked by the raven's nest, and there were four young ravens standing on the edge of the nest, peering down at me. I think mom and dad they were quiet because they didn't want to call attention, but they were probably a little upset that I was there. So they are doing fine. It looks like they're going to have a nice, healthy family this year, and I love the ravens, and I'm really happy to see them doing well. Red-winged blackbirds, the first females showed up at my feeder on Saturday, and that was 7 days early. And I heard common snipe the other morning, and they were 4 days late. And now these kinds of 3-4 days early or late, that's sort of like, You know, it could have been that I just wasn't in the right place at the right time, but the snipe definitely is back, and many of you have heard them. They do these kind of low dives where they flutter their tail feathers, and it makes a kind of a whistling sound, sort of a up and down kind of a... I'm not going to get it. But they are out there making a ruckus right now, and they were just a little bit late.
You can't beat a sound effect from John Latimer.
Right? He's good at them. He's got lots.
And a big reminder, I haven't had that much time to just be on our deck and have my Merlin app open and really kind of listen to what's going on. I've found if I play, it can also call in a bird, or it can be calling back and forth, which is kind of fun. I don't think they probably expected that might be something going on with the Merlin app, but...
It's funny you mentioned that. With the bitterns, you know, they're so hard to see. Scientists who are trying to study them have, you know, a really hard time finding them and then capturing them. I was reading about them on All About Birds, just the Cornell Lab of Ornithology website. And the way that they essentially have to lure them in, and the way they lure in the males, they're super territorial during the breeding season. And so with a combination of, like, recordings of the glug 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 and mirrors, they're able to lure in the bitterns to be able to study them and band them, etc. But I love scientists. So creative. They always find a way.
John, they're noticing so many birds, and we also had the juncos are gone. I think it's real easy to, you know, you have juncos for a bit and they're gone, you think something's wrong.
Yeah. They're just migrating north.
Yeah.
Yep. They breed up. Some of them do breed in northern Minnesota, but primarily up in Canada. But I love the note about he has that raven nest and seeing four young ravens standing on the edge of the nest peering down at him.
He loves That's ravens amazing. So much. We had our nephew over Christmas was staying with us, and he built us a wood duck house. So Tom put that up this week at our house.
Oh, great.
And when I left for work yesterday, I was driving down our driveway, and I thought it was a bunny on the road. It's dark out, you know, it's early in the morning. Mm-hmm. I think it was ducks on the road farther down.
Oh.
Because they didn't, luckily I slowed down, because a bunny moves quickly, you know, once the car's getting close. But they were not moving. And then they flew off, but it was dark enough I couldn't quite see if it was a wood duck or... Uh-huh. It was the shape of a duck, so it's got to be. But I just hadn't seen that before on our road, well away from the lake.
Yeah, I mean, wood ducks, but they tend to perch in trees. I almost wonder whether you saw a woodcock.
Oh, maybe.
Because they're kind of duck-shaped.
Okay. Yeah, I just know it was not a bunny, and it flew.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and it was dark out. That
does suggest bird.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless, you know, you've got some unholy haunting.
Thank you for that. You're right. It is definitely a bird. It flew. Yeah, it's always interesting. I'll take a watch for them. I just hadn't noticed. And yeah, there's so many things to be watching out there.
Yes. And I can't believe we haven't talked about the wildflowers yet.
Yeah.
But so I don't know if you know the kids' book, Home for a Bunny.
No,
But it's one that I read growing up, and my nephew is reading right now, and it's all about like a little bunny trying to find its home. But the illustrations in A Home for a Bunny I don't know if the illustrator is from Minnesota or what, but they are absolutely plants from here. And so as we've been reading this book, I've been teaching my nephew all of these spring wildflowers, and then I took my nephew for a walk and hearing him say patica and bloodroot.
Oh my gosh.
Makes my heart so happy. And there are even bog plants like a sundew and a pitcher plant. It's great. I'm such a happy little auntie.
No kidding. So help us, you know, until we meet again next week, something we should look for in terms of wildflowers. I know, you know, you mentioned hepatica. Remind us what they look like.
So hepatica it's going to very much depend on where you live right now. Spring's a hard time to tell you what wildflowers to look for because they're already done here. Okay. And I think they're probably mid or peak where you are, and they might not even be starting yet up in Grand Marais. But the springtime, the main springtime wildflowers that I look for are the hepatica, which have very fuzzy stems. They can be a variety of different colors, but they have a lot of petals, and they're the first wildflowers to pop up.
Okay.
So once the snow melts, those are going to be the first ones you see. They have leaves that have kind of three lobes to them. We have two different species, a sharp-lobed and a round-lobed hepatica. Bloodroots are another one of my favorites. They are bright white with a vibrant yellow center, and they pop up from the ground with kind of like wrapping their leaf around them like it's a little vampire cloak. So they pop up from the ground just as a little spike with a leaf completely circled around the flower, and then slowly the flower will emerge out the top and the leaf will unfurl. They're so dramatic. I love them. Those are the next ones that I look for.
And how does your nephew say bloodroot again?
Bloodroot.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, I love him.
So great.
And right now, so both of those are pretty much done in my place. The jack in the pulpits are just starting to emerge. They have three leaves and this little kind of vase-shaped flower with a little covering over the top. And then if you look in there, there's a little pillar in the middle. It's called a spadix. And that's the little jack that's in his little pulpit. Those are beautiful. Before long, we'll have red columbines, also called honeysuckle. Those are the ones that kids often know that one because at the end of the flowers, there are these little kind of circular orbs that have all the nectar. They're very sweet. Hummingbird pollinators. When those flower, often is right around when the hummingbirds arrive. Trilliums are going to be starting. Another three-leafed friend. So don't just go pulling out all the three-leafed things in your woods because you think they're poison ivy.
Yeah.
You might have some good friends in there.
I love trillium on our hill. It's just a staple of spring, and I got to keep my eyes open. And we recommend you do the same and leave us a voice memo through SpeakPipe. It's really easy to do that. Find the Season Watch page on KEXC.org, and you can record right there through your phone. But maybe you are somebody who wants to pay attention to just a couple of things. I have now I'm going to come back in our conversation next week with a bird and at least one wildflower that I've noticed. I need to do it.
I like it.
They're
I'll
writing
join
it
you.
Down. Oh my gosh. Okay.
Yep.
That is our assignment.
Yes.
Well, we want to thank all the folks who were involved in this week's program.
Our Wilson's Snipe recording was from Andrew Spencer through Zeno Canto. And the American Bittern was a recording from iNaturalist from a user called The Perfect Breeze, which is a great iNaturalist username, The Perfect Breeze.
And we want to thank for support of the student phenology reports, as always.
The Environmental Natural Resources Trust Fund, which is from the LCCMR, Legislative Commission on Citizen... LCCMR, I can do this.
Yeah,
Legislative Citizen Commission.
On Minnesota Resources.
Minnesota Natural Resources.
There we go. Also, reminder, if you are in the Twin Cities, if you're not going fishing on opening fishing, that's the day it happens. On May 9th, John Latimer and I will be a part of Minnesota, the Star Tribune's Unbound. And it is people talking about nature. We'll be at Theodore Worth Park in Golden Valley. Should be a great time, and it is free and open to everyone, but you do need to RSVP. But you can come out and meet John Latimer and learn more about nature.
Absolutely. It's Strib Unbound is the website, or what you can Google. Strib Unbound. S-T-R-I-B.
I think we got to hear this bittern again before we go.
Yes, please. Do you have time for a bonus?
Yep.
Excellent. For our lucky podcast listeners, I also wanted to mention there was this warm, rainy day about a week ago where the frogs were everywhere. And out on, just driving down the road, they were just hopping across. It was so wonderful. There was a, oh, words are so hard to find right now. There was a boreal chorus frog and a green frog and a leopard frog and a toad. So very exciting. On those warm, rainy days, it's so worth it to put on a raincoat and go out and just look for frogs.
Good call. Let us know. Tell us your stories. We would love to hear from you. Leave a voice memo for us through SpeakPipe and have a great week in nature.
Absolutely. Thank you for listening.